Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Help, help, I'm being immersed.
How you doing, Jim?
I know, is that repressed?
That was the line, but that works.
Oh.
So, folks, we don't have a guest this week, but we might have a cool one next week. Stay tuned for that.
Yes, we don't have a guest this week, and you know what happens.
Oh, we're going to talk about a lot of things.
Space pirates.
Space pirates. We can get immersed in that. But first, let's talk about some news. Some of the big news has been happening lately. We finally got to see a little bit of The Last Federation, which, if you recall, we had Chris on the podcast a little while back talking about it. Chris Park?
Right? Yeah. Hey, that kind of that's kind of disappointing, though, because it rules out a sequel. If it's the last.
You can't really have The Last Federation 2.
Yeah, well, that would be like Unsinkable 2.
No, come on. But how many Final Fantasies have there been?
Well, that's true.
You know, they're up to 16 now, 18, 30, I don't know. And then they had two 10s. Remember that? Final Fantasy 10-2, which is the most, like, what?
I had two 10s once.
I walked right into that. I really did. Yes. I walked. So I bet you did, too. Sorry. Well, we're getting off to a great start here, folks. Jesus fuck. Yeah. So that released some footage. I looked at it for a few just moments when I had some time, but it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. It was not at all what I expected that game to look like. Because when he was showing the artwork, you know, it was like on the website, and it almost looked like a sideways thing, you know, like almost ASCII art spaceships facing each other. And I'm like, really? Is it going to be like that? And having seen the, you know, like the other games that they'd made, which were kind of simple graphically, I thought, oh, well, there we go. But no, this is a top-down, like RTS-looking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks pretty cool.
It does indeed.
I like how I mean, I enjoy when developers like to make space bright and colorful. I mean, space isn't probably bright and colorful, but I kind of like the idea that it could be with nebulae.
Well, with the proper medication, space could be bright and colorful.
It's true. Look at slow-mo from Dread. That made everything shiny and sparkly and colorful.
And it made Bieber famous. That's actually Bieber's song.
We talked about that before. That's right. Jeez. Yes.
So I'm downloading this thing right now.
What thing?
And it's called Cannons, Rockets, and Lasers.
Yeah. I've not played that yet. I love it.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm mid-download of it, actually.
It's on Desura, isn't it?
Actually, it's on Steam right now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It's a MOBA, which means that everybody playing it will be a punk. But other than that, you know, it's I don't know. Maybe they're trying to go for League of Legends in space or something. Maybe.
You know, as soon as you said MOBA, I'm just like,
right? Because we've played some League of Legends and we know the personality of the players.
Yeah. So, well, it's free.
It is free. Free for the moment. But if you buy the Elite Pack, then you get the other ships. You only start with two crappy ships otherwise, and then you have to get your wallet out. But I'll play it, and we'll see.
You know what? I will download it as well. Why not?
Sure. We could do that. So, what else is in the news?
Did you hear about that massive battle in EVE, where over $300,000 of real-world Starship money was destroyed?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Interesting. 78. Apparently, it was because this one alliance, like, didn't pay their rent.
Yeah.
And so that, like, left their base vulnerable or something. And that had everyone moving in for trying to take over, I believe. I've long since stopped understanding what goes on in there to understand what goes on in there. But when stuff like this happens, it's just fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I think that this stuff can happen. So, yeah, that's damned exciting.
Yeah, I heard that they're actually going to put a monument in space out there.
I think they already have. Either they're going to or they already have, yeah. I heard about that. Because, goddamn, that's pretty – that's a lot of ships. That's a lot of – that's like thousands of ships were lost, which is crazy, which is nutty. And yet, I saw some video of it, and it looked kind of wonky from a distance. I can't imagine trying to make heads or tails of actually being in the damn thing, even though you're just clicking orbit and shoot. That's pretty much all Eve is, isn't it? Orbit and shoot. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, or don't. I don't care, but that's what I think Eve
is. It's an orbital spreadsheet.
Yeah. Yeah. One that you don't even have to play to level in, which I just adore.
That's not in Orbital Robot Erection, though. That's a different game. You remember when we were talking about ORE, O-R-E, we were trying to figure out what it meant. Anyway, go on.
I vaguely remember that. Okay, what else? The Elite Dangerous multiplayer thing should be coming out soon. I'm excited about it because the single player thing, which I should talk about at some point, damn Jumpgate, that was fun. That felt really nice. Folks, if you have 200 pounds to spare...
That's a problem.
Yeah, I know. Like, I backed it, so I'm going to get the game, but that was like at 30 pounds, which is like, I think it was about $50. But if you want to actually get in the alpha right now, you have to pay 200 pounds, which is 200 pounds equals how many dollars? Tell me the Googles. $326.
No!
Holy crap!
You gotta really, really be curious about that game to get in at this point. I'll wait for the release, thanks.
Yeah, you know what though? It's kind of interesting that they're not pushing for money like Star Citizen.
Roberts's are.
Yeah.
The Dread Pirate Roberts.
They probably made just a fraction. Just a fraction of what Star Citizen has made. And yet, they already have a playable alpha where you can fly around and shoot stuff.
Right, but they also don't have hookers and blow. And you have to keep up with that. I don't really know what the heck Chris Roberts is doing with all that money, but it better be good.
Hiring people?
Yeah.
I believe hiring more people. They just opened recently a office in Manchester, England.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is going to be more dedicated to Squadron 42, I think. I could be wrong on that. It's so hard to keep up with everything over there.
They could hire us. I don't know what we'd do, but we'd do it.
Good job, guys. That's what I would probably be doing.
Oh, yeah. We'd be in charge of morale. Morale is true. The beatings will continue until morale
improves. You guys are doing great. Keep it up. Good job. I like it. I like what I'm saying. that'd be my job. Yeah. Good job. Oh, that ship looks great. That ship looks fantastic. So what else is happening in the news? Ethereum. Remember Ethereum?
I remember Ethereum. Yeah.
The apparently final version of the beta is almost done. So that's going to be out soon. Rock on. I'm excited about that because that was a fun little game.
Yes, I am definitely interested in that because – It addresses my Wing Commander itch in a direct way, not like I wish there was a game that's kind of like Wing Commander. This is like, oh, this is like Wing Commander.
This is really
straight
like
up. Yeah.
This is seriously Wing Commander.
Right, but it's something that will actually not look like ass on my machine.
Right.
And I won't have like problems with joystick pulling interrupts and, you know, control rates and crap like that. So sure, bring it on. I'm down for that.
Oh, I totally agree. I am damned excited. I had fun playing. I think the one or two missions I think there were five missions, and I think I played three of them in the last alpha beta version I played, whatever it was. And yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. There's just a lot of good stuff coming out.
There sure is.
Kickstarters. I mean, how do you keep track of it all? I don't know.
You have a website like Space Game Junkie.
Right. Oh my god! And so many RSS feeds. Thank God for Feedly. Let me just tell you that right now.
Yeah, because when Google Reader died, I was like, what will the world do?
When Google Reader announced that they were shutting Google Reader down, I was more mad about that than finding out that my blood pressure was so high that it could kill me.
Yeah.
I found that out on the same day.
Is there a coincidence, I wonder?
I don't know. The doctor said, okay, we can either send you to the emergency room or we can give you medicine.
Yeah.
I'll take the medicine.
I had no idea that you were hovering near death, even now.
I didn't know either, but apparently I'm fine now. I'm on two different blood pressure meds. Woohoo! And it's a good time. It runs in the family, and also I don't exercise and I don't eat well, so that doesn't help. After I got home, after finding out my blood pressure was like 2-something over 1-something, like a ridiculous number that like the doctor had never seen. Google Reader was going to shut down, and I was more mad about that. But because I'm stupid. But thank God for Feedly. Let me fucking tell you. I mean, I like them so much I pay for their premium stuff because I want to support them and keep them around. Thank God for RSS feeds. And developers, folks with websites, if you don't have an RSS feed, make one.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Seriously. There's a developer, Matthias, who – He and another person are working on DSpace Settlement,
mm-hmm.
and they have they don't really have a site with an RSS feed. They either put their shit on Twitter or IndieDB,
mm-hmm.
and I have the hardest time keeping up with their shit because there's like no central RSS feed.
Yeah.
And I keep telling them make one, but whatever, they don't listen to me. So that's my little rant about RSS feeds, folks. They're awesome. If you don't use them, learn to, because seriously, they save so much time. I'm not even kidding.
Yep.
Got to do it. That's how I keep up with the space game news. I have a separate category just for this shit, because you got to.
Yeah. So what else? What else went on? There's some Beyond stuff. Apparently,
Brent was Brent hadn't updated for a while. He was kind of sick for a while, and he has young kids too. So he's kind of got some craziness in his life, but he's still working on the game, which is good. The sad thing is we can never have him on the podcast because he's deaf.
Wow.
So that's really sad because he's just like the nicest goddamn person. Seriously, like he's just so – and he won't even hear me say this. He's like the nicest goddamn person.
You're such a bastard.
That's just sad. I'm saying nice things about it. It's not like the Amish. You know, fuck the Amish. They won't hear that.
Yeah, there's a girl that plays War Thunder with us, and she's deaf too. Yeah, I know, right?
Who plays War Thunder? What? No, I think they just released a study that's saying there are more girl gamers our age than guy gamers.
Right, but they all pretend to be guys so that they don't get hit on.
Isn't that fucking sad?
It's kind of terrible.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. But
blame it on the internet. There's no filters, right?
We love the internet.
You have the illusion of anonymity, and you can say anything to anybody. So
yeah, it's really, really sad.
But anyway, we have to keep her in mind because we're talking on TeamSpeak, you know, trying to fly around, and then every now and then it's like, oh yeah, we ought to type what we're doing, so she has a clue what's going on. So right. Yeah. I wonder how many deaf listeners we have on the podcast. Probably not many.
Probably not. I can't imagine. What?
Yeah, okay. So we haven't offended anybody. They don't know.
I hope not. What else is big in the news? Nothing really. Just some little bloggy posts from people and some new patches. And Wayward Terran Frontier is coming along nice. So I've been trying to get in touch with them. I think maybe we can get them on. Predestination. Their second Kickstarter was successful, like their first one was. So yay for them. I'm trying to get them on too. It's like tough getting people on. There's some good stuff.
We should have the guy from Kerbal Space Program on here.
I've emailed them a few times. I guess they're just really busy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I've emailed them a few times. Maybe I'm not emailing the right person.
You should lie and tell them that you're somebody famous.
I'm not that Brian Rubin. I'm that Brian Rubin from Hollywood. I'm Brian Rubin from Hollywood.
We're interested in licensing you for the Kerbal Space Program movie.
We're interested in redoing Apollo 13 entirely in Kerbal Space Program. We'll have Jebediah play the Tom Hanks role. He'll be perfect.
You know, whenever you go on the History Channel, right, and they had that show where they were recreating the famous battles of Alexander, and they were actually using like Rome Total War. Yeah. So we could tell them, like, okay, we're going to do like an Apollo history thing, and we're going to use the Kerbal engine on the History Channel.
Well, interestingly enough, they've partnered with an educational technology company recently, and they're going to start using Kerbal in the classroom, I believe, not only to recreate famous flights like that, but to help, you know, teach students physics. Neat. And stuff like that. Yeah, I think that's awesome.
I would say that's immersion in the classroom.
Oh, we're not there yet. That's our topic for this week, folks. But
spoilers. All right.
Let's talk about what we've been playing real quick. Now, since last the podcast, you said you've been playing Void Destroyer.
Yes. Tell me about that. Well, Void Destroyer got to the point because I am still in the first mission and I'm still discovering the game. And I think, honestly, the best thing that could be done right now is if Paul Z made a video of him playing the first mission and showed everybody, this is what I'm doing and this is why I'm doing this, it would click and we'd all be like, ah, okay. Because I'm continuing to discover stuff. Like yesterday, I discovered that you go into the command ship thing and then I found out, oh yeah, the last tutorial taught that. I kind of skipped that one because I got bored with the tutorials. But you build that transfer base and then you requisition ore and energy from the transfer base over to your ship, and then you can do your upgrades on your ship. And I thought, oh, okay, well, my ship's fully upgraded now. I'm a badass and I'll just build a bunch of fighters and click on me so that they form up on me, and they do, and then they say, ah, well, fuck it, we're going to go orbit the station again. You know, so and whenever I do get them in formation with me and I leave the station, they'll stick with me for a little while, and then they like race out in front of me toward the waypoint. So I think what I need to do is put them in formation with me and then select only myself and give the waypoint order or something.
I think there might be a way to have them go at the speed of the slowest ship.
Yeah, well, you know what would really do it is if I could give them orders like defend this object, and I would assign like.
Can't you do that already?
No, you last.
I thought you could. Like,
maybe,
I think
maybe
I remember.
I haven't discovered this yet.
Oh.
Because I can put them in. I can right click on an object and they'll orbit it, and maybe that's a defend thing. But then I right click on my command ship. And they'll form up on me, and then at the first sign of trouble, they all like scatter in all directions and fight things, you know. And they never return to formation. And if I'm too close to the asteroid base when I do it, they'll just abandon me and start orbiting the asteroid base again because I'm not exciting, I guess.
Huh.
But I did find out you can game that gravity drive because you can get up to ludicrous speed when you have the gravity drive on. And right. You can only gravity drive between your base and the enemy base, and going to the enemy base is certain suicide. But I wanted to get over to where that depot is off to the side, and I didn't want to take all day about it because my fighters were fighting over there. So I engaged gravity drive and then just turned and went to the other thing, and I had to manually cut the drive, but I could do it. So it doesn't lock you into, you know, you're hard routed to that destination.
That's cool.
So maybe he doesn't intend for you to be able to do that, but I'm doing it anyway.
it is still a beta.
Yeah, and that's been interesting. I discovered what I ended up doing is I reinstalled Homeworld Cataclysm, mm-hmm. and I played a couple missions of it, and I'm trying to, you know, because you spend a lot of time on the command screen in there, and I'm like, well, he's kind of replicating a lot of the Homeworld interface in his command screen, and I like that because I really liked Homeworld, but Homeworld didn't let you take direct control of the ships, so this is kind of best of both worlds. And although whenever I take direct control of the ships, I die miserably. So I spend most of my time. I spend most of my time in the
same thing here in Void Destroyer. Whenever I'm like, oh, I'll take control of the ship, dead. Oh, yes. I'll take a stroll. Dead. I'll take a stroll. Fuck. I'll take a stroll. Dead. Shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm out. You guys do it. I'm done.
Well, the secret that I've found is there's a checkbox in the interface that says do not automatically turn off crew control when I jump into the ship.
Yeah,
and the ship will continue to do stuff, because otherwise you jump into the ship, you're disoriented, you have no idea what's going on, and you're a sitting duck until you regain your senses. And if you don't turn off crew control, then the ship just continues doing what it was doing, and that's a good thing because it wasn't dead yet. So yeah, but anyway, so in the homeworld interface, I remembered, oh yeah, like placing a coordinate in 3D space is tough, in a 2D interface. It's rough. But in there, it's got the height lines on the ships, so I can kind of see where they're at. And what that allows me to do is I can get the little cursor over to where the height pole is, and then I know that in the 2D plane, it's in the right place. And then I have to figure out vertically where they are. But if I'm holding the key down to do that, and then you right-click and move the mouse, it rotates the view. And then you can raise the elevation up until – because you knew that on the X and Y plane, you were okay. So you rotate the view so that you can see the Z plane, the elevation. And then you just bring it up to where you want to be and let go of the button. And then you're good. So then I took that back to Void Destroyer, and son of a gun, it works. So – I had to go back to the old game to learn how to play the new game. So it's like it's interesting. I think what needs to happen is Paul needs to just record a demo video of the complete first mission. Just here's how to beat that first mission and all the features that I used when I did it. And then we'll watch that, and he needs to have like a running commentary while he does it, and then good. I think honestly that would not only would clarify it better than a manual for the people that have the game, but I think that would actually draw new eyes to the game, because people would see it and be like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh,
so I'm gonna approach him with that.
Yeah, that might be a good idea, because I don't know if he has done that at all.
I don't think he has. He needs to get a Twitch account and get that going.
Yeah, that would be probably pretty beneficial, huh?
But yeah, I've probably put 10 hours in that game in the first mission, just screwing around with stuff. Seriously. Well,
it's good to hear that you can put 10 hours into that game, and in the first mission and not be, totally stomped on. Maybe that's good, because it gives you time to like what you're doing. You're experimenting, you're learning. I mean, it's a lot of time in one mission, though. But,
yeah, I'd say it's really like closer to 5, but it feels like 20. But I've definitely – for the last – well, since we talked to him, that was last week, right?
That was last week, yeah.
So I've fired it up at least once a day, and I'm just still trying to get my head around it. So, yeah, I'd say maybe an hour and a half a day. So, I'm probably up there around 10 hours. So, but a lot of it is also kind of testing. Not necessarily trying to beat the mission, but let's see what happens when I do this. And, so, yeah.
Right. Well, that's cool. I mean, it hasn't been too frustrating?
I still am playing it. I haven't torn my hair out. Well, I shave my head, so I can't. But, yeah, so there's that. The other game that I've been playing, not as much of as I want to, but I need to hook up the 360 controller, is Kingdoms of Amalur, because it was on sale.
That's one of the few games I've actually finished.
Yeah?
I finished it on the PS3 back in 2011 when I was unemployed, I believe. And it's a fun time. It's not like – I played that before I played Skyrim, and a lot of people were comparing the two at the time. And like Amalur has its charms. It's no Skyrim.
No.
But it has charms.
It's not even trying to be Skyrim.
It's like
what if Don Bluth made Skyrim?
That's actually, yeah. But the combat is that's my favorite thing about that game, is the combat.
Yeah, because it's kind of arcadey, button mashing.
It's visceral.
As a level, what was I like, level 3, I think, and I was playing the warrior, and I found this like two-handed lightning hammer. It's more like a maul, right? But it's like a giant cartoon mallet. And it just it cracks lightning when it splits skulls, and it's great. Oh, it's nice. it's a good feeling game. You know, yeah, just really get in is. There and just beat the shit out of some guys. And yeah. and it's also like Skyrim. You can play it entirely how you want, because when you yeah. start out, you're just a generic, you know, Joe, and then it's whatever you do, you get better at. So yeah. you know,
I totally played through as a mage, and my favorite weapons were the chakrams. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you use those.
No, but I was watching a guy on Twitch the other night using them.
Oh, they're so much fun, because if you use them right, you can like not knock fuckers into the air. It's like boom, 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 boom,
well,
boom.
That, but that's what, because it's like an arcade fighting game. You can juggle.
Yeah.
Like even with the mallet, I was juggling guys, and I'm like, oh, you swat them in the air and then like knock them for a home run.
Oh, so, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Wow, excuse me. Maybe I should try revisiting the game as a warrior.
Yeah, it's definitely a different animal. I was, because I'm coming off of Skyrim playing as a thief, right? And yeah. and like we were discussing before the show, I was frustrated. It's like I did all the crap for the Dark Brotherhood, and I got a note, and they're like, you know, they send me a note with a black palm on it, and it's like, we're watching you. And I'm like, okay, bring it on, guys. And nothing. So I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he's like, well, did you sleep yet? It's like, no, nobody sleeps in Skyrim.
Yeah, who sleeps in Skyrim?
So that's the key. You have to, like, put your head on the pillow.
So if you get married in Skyrim and you sleep next to your husband or wife, because you can get married to the same sex in Skyrim,
yeah.
You get a lover's bonus. I'm not even making that up.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, like, then you wake up and there's a baby in the room.
No, you can only adopt children in Skyrim. You can't actually have any, which, okay, I guess being dragonborn makes you sterile, I guess.
Well, that yeah, I can see. They have a mod where you can kill the kids in town now.
What?
Apparently the kids are immune, right? Like you can kill any adult, but you can't kill the kids. So yeah, so there's this video where this guy like had a – he'd put the mod in, and then he like Fusro Dot all the kids and had them all stacked up like cordwood in his house. Because you can do whatever you want in that game. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really nice.
But somebody was talking about, with Skyrim, the things that make the game so much fun for them, because we're talking about immersion in a little bit here, is the immersion breaking bugs. When unintentional comedy gold happens in that game.
Yeah.
You know, like when you you Fusro Da a walrus and like fire it over the top of a castle somehow, you know, the physics break and
I don't remember that guy's YouTube name, but there's a guy on YouTube, he calls himself the King of Sweden, and
yes,
he has a
Brabas.
Is that his name? Something like that.
R-O-P-A-Z.
We'll try and find it I'll put it in the show notes. He's got a bunch of Skyrim videos, and they are the funniest goddamn thing. I swear to God, I was watching some on my lunch break at work, and I was trying so hard not to laugh.
Did I send you that, or did you discover it?
You might have. I don't remember. You might have. I wouldn't be surprised if you did.
Yeah, because it was the one.
I wouldn't be surprised if you did.
He's got his horny walrus that.
Oh, no, walrus, why are you crying? Yeah, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Seriously, folks, it is the funniest stuff, especially if you're into Skyrim and you watch some of the stuff he does. Oh my God, it's so funny. He hasn't done a video in a while though.
He has. Not about Skyrim, but he's done other stuff. He just put one up last night, actually, where he was
of playing. What?
What the heck was he playing? I would have to look.
But that's
but if
cool.
you if you go on YouTube and search for Robbaz, R-O-B-B-A-Z, he's got a channel, and then you
I'll link to it in the show notes as well, folks.
Become a Viking today. Oh yeah, he was playing DayZ.
Oh yeah,
Which wasn't as funny. He was playing the Car Mechanic Simulator.
I just love that exists.
He plays a lot of Kerbal. But he calls it the Viking Space Program.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? We should watch some of those.
He's
he's a funny fellow, folks.
Definitely not PG rated. It's no. Hard R.
Oh no. Yeah, do not, if you listen to work, headphones. Have to use headphones. No question. It is NSFW, not safe for work. Audibly, not safe for work.
No.
I don't know about visually, but visually audibly. Visually, it's okay. But yeah, I guess.
He did some kind of weird stuff where he got a mod into GTA 5 on his Xbox. They have some kind of mod in there. I don't know what they do this, like yank the hard drive out and hex edit files or something. But anyway, it's called the Tsunami mod, and the city is actually half flooded.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. It's pretty weird.
That sounds kind of terrible.
They apparently just like hacked the sea level. And yeah, it's pretty weird. So they're like running around and the tops of skyscrapers are sticking up out of the ocean.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That sounds kind of terrifying.
But you would say the city is immersed.
Oh my God, dude. So is that what you've been playing?
That's basically it. Yeah. A little of this, a little of that. The problem is that I haven't been able to focus on a game and not have, like, game ADD. Because it's like, I'll play something for 5 minutes and I'm like, oh, I should be playing something else. Or not at anything at all, or I should just stare at the wall.
That's the beauty of Steam sales. You feel like that? What else is on my Steam list? Exactly. I've got 600 things here. And 100 of them are installed. What should I try?
I look down the list and I'm like, nah.
I just did that before the podcast. I'm like, I want to play a little of something. I haven't tried this War Game Airland Battle yet.
Yeah, we need to play that, dude.
I'm going to load that up and try the tutorial, one of the tutorials. I got creamed in the tutorial.
Oh, yeah, the tutorials will punish you.
My God.
Did you get to the ones with the infantry?
I've only done one. It was with the tanks, and I got my ass whooped.
Oh, yeah, don't leave that first town. Get some reinforcements. Don't run, like, up to where the enemy is. Or they will lambaste.
God damn it. God damn it. That's exactly what I did.
Yep. I know that because I did it too, twice.
It is a beautiful game.
Oh, it's great. It's the right level of RTS for me because you have a few units. You don't have a ton of stuff coming from different directions. It's just like you might have two different battle groups. But that's all I can handle is that, you know, like two battle groups, some scouts, and a little air support. And that is enough keyboard piano for me to play to keep me busy. Any more than that, and I'm just saturated. I can't do it.
I think that's on sale, like, right now, folks.
It is. $11.
12 bucks, guys. The amount of content, apparently, this game has is insanely incredible. So if you have any interest at all in Cold War warfare, that's probably one to pick up, even though we're on the Space Game podcast. Speaking of space games, I'm going to mention again, folks, I know I've been talking about a lot, but I've put as much time into Jumpgate in 1 month, a third of it, as I put into Skyrim in a year and a half. A little over a year, because I put about 100 hours into Skyrim, I think, at this point. I've put 30 into Jumpgate just in the last month. Yeah, I'm actually going to probably start doing a journal about my time for the site.
That would be interesting, definitely. Well,
I wasn't doing really – I mean, I was finding it interesting, but I didn't think running transport missions and mining would make for very good journal entries.
Right, and that's why I can't do a journal because I'd be like, undocked from here, flew these three hops and turned in the thing. And then I repeated that 30 times until I got level 10.
But folks, even though that sounds kind of grindy, it's really not. It's fun, and you help the universe and the economy, blah, blah, blah. But they finally implemented squadrons, which are kind of like guilds. And you've joined a squad, and I've joined a squad, two different squads. What squad did you join?
I joined the Brotherhood.
The Brotherhood.
Yes, because you said that they were the guys that went out and did the fighting and stuff.
Yeah, they protect okay, folks, there are three factions in the game, Quantar, Solrain, and Octavius. And each have kind of their own sector of space. Like it's kind of like upside-down triangle. And the bottom part of the triangle is Quantar space. And so the Brotherhood kind of protects that from incursions. They keep this the system beacons tuned to quantar frequencies. So one, they get experience for it, and two, they get, you know, if an enemy enters that system, I believe they'll be told. It's kind of interesting. So the Brotherhood is a squad that handles that. I joined a squad that's basically space trucking. That's what they do. They're haulers. They're haulers and they're miners. And that's what I love in the game. So I've joined Mac. That's the name of that squadron. Like the truck. So I'm terribly excited. So now I'll probably start doing journals because I'm in a squad. I can be like, logged on for the first time since joining such and such. Asked what they wanted me to do and did this, you know. Mine this level of ore. Take it here to be refined. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I'll probably start doing those soon. Because goddamn, that's a great game. And folks, if you haven't started playing it, again, free. You don't need a joystick. Why aren't you playing? that's not all I've been playing, surprisingly. There was a Kickstarter game called Interstellaria, something like that. And it's kind of like FTL, but instead of a top-down view of your ship, you get a side view of your ship. And you could also, like, land on planets. And right now it's very early alpha. But you can fly around, you can do fighting, which is very similar to FTL, and you can land on planets and shoot guys and get their gold coins and get money. And so I've put maybe an hour or so into that. I've been having a good time. Like, for serious. I'm going to probably record a video of that soon for y'all. I actually recorded one, but it got corrupted, which I was very upset about. But Interstellaria was a good time. Seriously.
So where is that available from?
God, it was on their Kickstarter. I don't know. Hang on. I don't know. Let me see. Interstellaria. Yeah, that's it. Oh, I like how – look at this. Their screen looks like Starflight. Their opening – it's not even what the opening screen of the game looks like, but they've got like a little – I'm going to put it in Steam here. And it looks like the Starflight opening screen, which is so sweet.
Wow, it's Master Cold Rice.
Yeah, that's
like a ninja rapper name. Master Cold
Pretty much.
Rice.
Pretty much. But yeah, the game, there's space combat and it's cool. When the ship blows up, they leave debris, which could be components or money or guns and stuff that you can then use. And you could also run away, which much easier than you can in FTL, which is nice. I only learned that the hard way after dying many times. You know, what's this button do? I can leave.
The side view of the ship kind of reminds me of Starbound.
Yeah, a little bit. And in that side view, you can put different components like tactical computers and things that give you you'll target ships faster and you'll maybe shoot faster or you'll dodge better, you know, stuff like that. And you can hire more crewmen, you can buy bigger ships, and then you can land on planets and fight robots and monsters and get their coins and then use that money to buy more stuff for your ship or buy a new ship. And, oh, my God, if you scroll down, there's a screen where the ship looks just like the one from Starflight. Oh, I love these guys so much. Seriously. They're really going for the Starflight look here.
Oh, yeah. God, it does.
Right?
Wow.
Right? So, I like I said, I played about an hour of that. I just got the alpha a few days ago. It's really fun. And they had a Kickstarter, which was super successful. But it doesn't look like you can actually buy it right now. You can vote for it on Greenlight, but it doesn't look like you can buy it.
I'm voting as hard as I can. I hope they can feel it.
Yeah. But I dig it. And like you have different guns and stuff on the planet. Like there's a shotgun, a pistol, and a rifle, and they have different damages and different ammo levels and stuff. So it's pretty cool. And you can just leave the planet at any time. So if like you see a room with 18 guys in it, like, yeah, I'm done. I don't think I should do it anymore. You can just hit a button and the thing comes down and gets you and you leave. So,
this is making me want to play, crap. The Pit.
You know, I have not played that yet. Even though I own it, I have not.
Yeah.
Played
Sword
it.
Of the Stars, The Pit. Yeah. That's
should
it.
I play that? Should I?
Yes.
Install
it? I should oh my install God. That? Play it.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
It's a roguelike, right?
Yes.
Very
yes.
much so, except that you play one of the races from that game.
I'm installing it right now. In fact, I think as we speak, there's a sale on there's a sale on that as well, a week long sale on that, I believe, on Steam right now. So,
yeah, because you're talking about like going down on the planet, and there's like a room with 10 guys, and you run, and I'm thinking like, oh yeah, Sword of the Stars, the Pit. So I also need to, speaking of roguelikes, return to Dungeon of the Endless and see what's become of that. It's kind of interesting.
Did you pay for that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, and how is that?
It's decent. It's in the spirit of a roguelike. You open up rooms one after another, but it's not like a roguelike where you directly control your position in the room. You just control, are you in this room or that room, right? And then in the room, there are sockets for things that you can build, like defensive turrets and, you know, energy sources and things like that. So there'll be one large socket and multiple small sockets. In small sockets, you can put guns and sensors and things. And then in the big socket, you put what the role of that room is. Like, I'm going to put a power generator in this room or whatever. And then depending on how many power generators you have, that's how many rooms you can actually light up. And only rooms that are powered can have turrets and devices in them. So the idea is to light the rooms up until you find the crystal, and then you have to make it – or no, until you find the exit. And then you have to go back to where the beginning of the level is and grab the crystal. And then as soon as you grab the crystal, the game goes apeshit. Like, enemies come flooding in, right? And you have to get the crystal out through the exit. So you have to basically explore the level and find the exit – go back to the beginning, and then fight your way back to the exit again through hordes of monsters. And in doing that, you have to have set your turrets and stuff up to kill those monsters, because your guys aren't going to be able to handle it. So it's a mix of a roguelike and a tower defense game.
Huh.
It's interesting. I don't know if it's exactly my cup of tea, but it's definitely worth some time invested in it.
I'll have to try it.
I wish there was a demo. If they would let you just play a demo at the first level, then people would know whether it's for them or not.
And that is on Steam?
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, it's an early access thing.
It's 10 bucks right now.
Yeah, I'd wait for it to go on sale.
Okay. I'll do that. Now, is this where the fun that should have been in Endless Space ended up?
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't know. Endless Space is fun for me, but I like it simple like that. And I automate all my combat anyway, so.
But then don't you always lose when you do that?
No, not always. It's all about when you automate the combat and you pick the cards ahead of time, and I always pick the flexible thing. So it's just like whatever happens, my ships will adapt. And, you know, I just come in with much better ships and I'm okay.
Right. Well, okay. I'm installing the Pit right now, so there
you go. So, are you immersed?
I think that's everything I've been playing. Yeah. So, folks, we had a topic this week that I came up with, because we didn't have a guest, so we wanted to come up with some kind of topic, is immersion. Now, I got this idea because I saw that the Star Citizen folks did a video of it, and I only watched a little of it because I don't have time to watch every video all the way through, unfortunately.
They produce a lot of content.
They do. I mean, not just them, but any video. I just don't have the time. But good on them for producing a lot of content. So they did a video on immersion, and I watched a little of it, and I liked what they were talking about, so I thought we should talk about that. So let's talk about what immersion is, because we were talking about that before the podcast, and we should kind of talk about what it is before we talk about the games we think, and you think, because I asked you guys, some of you guys, what you think, which games are immersive. So I have two definitions here. I have one from Google and one from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Now, Google says, you know, immersing someone or something in a liquid. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is deep mental involvement. That's what Google says. Ooh, deep mental involvement. While Merriam-Webster's dictionary says complete involvement in some activity or interest. Does that sound about right to you, Jim?
I'm sorry, I was immersed in something else. What?
Oh, for God's sake.
Son of a bitch! No,
It's, well, see, that's the thing, is there's the definition of the word, and then there's the marketing definition of the word, right? So anybody would say, well, anybody's like, our game's totally immersive, you know, and whatever. But do you mean immersive like I lost track of time while playing it? Or does it mean immersive like in a Skyrim kind of experience where you're actually absorbed in the environment that is in the game and there's enough landscape to the game, not literal landscape, but there's enough interaction there, right? And that's another thing. When I say interaction, then people will say, well, you can flush the handle on every toilet in our game, therefore it's fully immersive. That's no. So, you know, so it's a tough thing to define. Different people will take that different ways. The way that I take immersion is if I am not disrupted from having my attention focused on the events in the game by external things, like I have to hunt up a key card or I have to pause the game and go to a wiki and Google, like, how the hell do I do this, right? That kind of thing. But, I mean, those are, like, minor offenses. In a game, well, like, we were talking about I'm playing a lot of Void Destroyer, right? And I'm fighting the interface in that, just struggling to figure out how to play the game. So I would say I'm immersively defeated on that because I'm always aware that this is a game and what are his mechanics, right? When I'm thinking about a game in terms of the game and the mechanics and things, then I'm not what I would say immersed. I'm not accepting of the virtual reality that it is providing, right?
Then that's totally fair, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that goes for other games where if you're playing the game and it doesn't present obstacles to immersion in that way, because I'm sure that once I get totally comfortable with that game and he kind of smooths some things out, then it'll be like I can just plug my brain into the game and be there for a while and not have to think too hard about things outside the game, right? Like I don't have to pull up the help menus and try to figure stuff out. But there's other games where there are things that are just so frickin' gamey about the game that you're thinking in terms of, like, how do I exploit the AI or how do I do whatever? And at that point, it you're a person playing a game. You're not the character and having the experience of, you know, being a person in a situation and doing that. It's more like you're outside the screen sitting there banging on a keyboard trying to make something happen.
Right. Now, what would you say is an example of a game that did that to you?
TIE Fighter. Oh. I mean, in a negative way?
Yes.
Oh. In a negative way. No, definitely not TIE Fighter. TIE Fighter is like a perfect example of immersion because there's like 10 keys that you need to know.
Yeah.
And once you have them all programmed on your joystick, then you're good. And then you're there, right? And after you play it for a little while, you can focus on it and you hit like kind of a zen play in that where it's just like what's on the screen is all that matters.
Yeah.
And you
that
feel
was gonna be one of,
yeah, you
that
you,
was going to be one of my examples, yeah.
Because you feel like at some point, you know, like when you're driving a car and you actually feel a part of the car, if you can play a game and you actually feel like you're directly plugged into the game, right? It's like the things on the screen are an extension of you.
Right.
Great. That's immersion to me. But yeah, other things, I can't think of anything like right off that because I avoid that stuff, you know, like
yeah.
I'll play something for 5 minutes and if I'm not feeling it, it just stays on the Steam list and gathers dust. So
yeah, it's kind of a balancing act between, like you were saying, having a simple UI that just doesn't get in your way, but also providing a world where that UI that doesn't get in your way, providing a world that draws you in.
Yeah.
So you stay there. You want to stay there. You want to imagine yourself there. And again, yeah, TIE Fighter is an exceptional example.
in a lot of games they talk about, and I think that this helps, definitely, but where they've got like a rich fictional backstory to the game. And it's not so much a backstory, because if I have to sit and read have it dictated to me in a cutscene in the first century, the emperor or whatever did the... I don't care, because, now once I'm in the game, does it matter?
Yeah,
or can I exactly. skip it? Because if the information provided in the backstory is then a basis for the situation in the game, right, then we'll go back to Skyrim, right? Like, there's that history that's there. And the history is not preached to you at the beginning of the game. You're a dude in a situation, and you have no idea how the hell you got there, right? As Skyrim right. games, or all the Bethesda games do. It's like, oh, I'm a prisoner, and I'm loose, and... what's my name? Right. But what they do is they hide the lore around so you can pick books up and read them and stuff. And then you find, and people in the game continually make references to historical events and things. And then when you do historical events, people make references to those. So it's kind of like, it feels like you're part of the fabric of things. You know, it's like the game didn't start when I turned it on. The game has been going on fictitiously, for a long time. And this is just, this is just the point where I am inserted into it. So, exactly. So that's good for me. But versus like a Mario game where it's like, okay, I'm a dude and I jump on mushrooms and turtles. Okay. I don't need a lot of backstory for that, but can you be immersed in that? Oh, absolutely. Because you don't need your rich backstory and everything. It's just like, I'm a dude, I'm jumping on mushrooms, and, oh, was the phone ringing? I had no idea. I'm in it. So that can happen on different levels, and I don't think there's any magic formula that
No, there isn't. It. Some games just do it really well. Like, one example, my favorite example besides TIE Fighter is Free Space 2.
Yeah.
I mean... I've played Free Space 2 through maybe half a dozen times. I've played Free Space 1 only once. I enjoyed it, but I never felt the need to go back. But Free Space 2 is great because you don't need to know anything about what happened. They'll slowly explain it to you in mission briefings, and you get the story unfolding through you when you're actually playing the game. That's one of the beauties of both TIE Fighter, I think, and Free Space 2 is that stuff happens story-wise while you're in the cockpit.
Yes, absolutely.
It happens, and so you feel like you're part of this ongoing story because you feel like you're right there in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to your other favorite topic of flight sims, right? And you are enjoying playing over Flanders Fields, I cannot get immersed in it. So the deal with you is that you're into... Like there's other pilots in the squadron and people die. There's a purpose for going on the missions, right? Exactly. And they string together and it builds towards something versus being a game, like the Eagle Dynamics guys make where it's like, oh, I'm going to load up a mission in the mission editor that somebody made. And what am I supposed to do here? Okay. I take off here and I fly over there and I bomb that thing. And there's probably going to be some guys try to stop me. Okay.
Exactly.
And to me, that feels like, okay, I'm playing a simulator. It's a single serving scenario, and it doesn't really, the results of what I do don't really matter because I can just try it again and again and again until I get good enough to beat it.
Exactly.
And it was a challenge and that, but the next thing that I play is not influenced at all by what I did versus a game like Jane's F-15. Which had a branching campaign, much like Wing Commander, really. Yeah, I think it exactly. took a note from Wing Commander on that. So if I pass or fail this mission, that determines which branch I'm going down. So things could be wildly different for me. And I think that has a lot to do with it, too, because there's actual risk and reward and there's consequences.
Exactly. Your choices and your actions and feel like they matter.
Yeah, but the reason I can't get into Flanders Fields is because it feels gamey to me.
Oh,
it doesn't play as smoothly. It's like it feels like a really old flight simulator because it is.
It is, and yeah.
So
I can understand that. Yeah, folks.
I almost feel like I'm flying a desk, you know?
Yeah, folks, if you don't know what Wings Over Flanders Field is, I think I might have mentioned it before. It's a super mod. It's a total conversion for Microsoft's Combat Flight Simulator 3, which came out in 2002. Now, they've done a fine job, like, making the graphics as good as they can and everything, and they've added so much to the game. But, yeah, Jim, you have a point. Like, if you can't get past, like seeing this is a sim from 2002, if you can't get past that, then you're not going to feel immersed.
Well, but the problem is that I can pick up IL-2, which is also from 2002, and yeah. I can play IL-2 all day, and it's got a fluidity to it that game does not have. It's radically different engine.
I feel the complete opposite from you, because IL-2, the world, maybe it's the world. I don't know. The world feels so sterile and empty.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on there. It's like it's you and the guys that you fight, and that's about all that's going down.
Exactly. I think that's why Wings of Flanders Field works for me, because it has a dynamic engine that models the entire front.
You know, the best game that ever was for that is still Falcon 4.
Yeah. Though I hear Battle of Britain 2 is excellent as well. I have not played that one.
Oh, okay. Because in Falcon 4, I would be flying along, and I would spend most of my time rubbernecking because, oh, there's a tank battle going on over there. And yeah. My mission isn't really to go help those guys, but I'm interested in it. It's something that the game is doing that has absolutely nothing to do with me, and it's not going to have any effect on me, except that the campaign map, you know, things move depending on how the armies do. But if I come back from the mission and I've got an extra bomb, I can go down there and drop it, and it will potentially, or at least I feel that it will potentially, assist that AI unit and right. Do something in the campaign. So, yeah, that's why I loved that game, even though it had a manual like a telephone book. And I would say that I never reached what I would call basic competence.
No. In
it. But even though I put hundreds of hours into it, there was so much there, which is why I'm afraid of A10. You know,
yeah.
We've both got that chilling on our hard drives waiting on a day when we feel crazy enough.
Like, I've got nothing to do. And yet I don't want to enjoy myself. I'm going to load up A10 because it looks amazing. But again, I think that's my problem. One of my problems with why I haven't loaded that one is, again, the world apparently is very sterile.
But see, the thing for me, I can get past that.
I can't. I have a very hard time getting past that.
For me, a lot of it has to do – and God, I'm gonna bring up Void Destroyer again. It has a lot to do with my personal competency with the game, whether I can be immersed in it or not. And things that are like a casual game, I'll put that in air quotes, casual games, like it's a filthy term, because it makes me think of Zynga. but that casual market thing, there's not mm-hmm. enough immersion to that because it doesn't demand it from me. So I could be very competent with it because it takes very little effort, right? But the minimal effort means that there's really minimal interaction. So I'm not invested in it. However, you take a game where I had to work to get good at it, and then I am good at it, and I can play it like somebody that's been playing piano for years. You know, I'm maybe not a master, but I can go in there, and when I want to do something, I can do it. Then, yeah, that's immersion to me. Where I can, with some effort, there's resistance, but the resistance comes from the intended resistance in the game, not the additional bonus resistance of trying to figure out how the hell to make the game do things.
It's funny, while you've been talking, I've been trying to think of games that, like you mentioned, break immersion by either being too gamey or something. And the first thing I thought of, did you ever play a game in the mid-90s called Renegade Battle for Jacob's Star?
Absolutely. Yes, I did, from SSI.
Yeah, not a good game.
No, and that was one of those games that I struggled to love because it was like I liked the board game. I used to play that.
Yeah, it had a good universe. Like it had a well-realized universe, but the game itself – well, one, it wasn't very good. I mean, two, the combat engine was poor. The graphics were a little too cartoony. And I think what ruined it, even though their intentions were good, you could play your own audio CD. Remember that feature?
Oh, yeah, because back whenever computers had CD players.
Oh, mine still does. I don't know why people don't. Mine still does. But I will never get rid of one. But it's hard to get really into a space game where you're a single-player space game where you're supposed to be this Roman-like legionnaire in space when you got Alanis Morissette set going.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? I mean, I tried it. I'm like, oh, I could put this in here. And yes, I listened to him the last Morissette back in the day. I have no shame.
Isn't that ironic?
Don't you think? But, yeah, that it didn't really help. Like, I guess they maybe intended you to put in Star Wars.
Yeah,
or
like,
something.
It's like rain when you're flying in space.
Jesus fuck.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, but, honestly, I think that their choice of lore did not do them a good service there either.
Well, you know what's funny? There was a game that came out years before where you were also a Roman in space called Star Crusader.
Yes.
And that game was fucking fantastic. I mean, the combat engine wasn't that great.
Yeah, but the whole Roman stuff was
bad. And not only that, but
that game felt very British. It was British.
It was game tech, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
But not only that, but the universe was really well realized. The conflict was well laid out. The player had not just choice, like, during the mission, but in between missions. Like, at one point, you could choose to defect and fight for the resistance. And it was just an incredible experience, even though the graphics were kind of ridiculous and, like, it was one of those early CGI games where they tried to have CGI people and they were just awful.
Yeah. They looked like low-poly RoboCop.
Oh, God, even worse than that.
Terrible, terrible.
It was terrible, terrible, terrible. But it was – or no, Max Headroom, like low-poly Max Headroom, I think. There you go.
With a space helmet on.
Yes, exactly. It was awful. But they did such a – just a better job because I think it was because, one, it wasn't in your face. Two, it was just – they struck a better balance between setting things up in between the game and setting things up during the game.
Right, and it was also relatively simple controls if you were familiar with TIE Fighter and the Elk.
Or Wing Commander. It was very similar to those. Yeah, exactly.
So it basically took a play style that you're familiar with and expanded it a little bit, but it didn't completely break it, and it's not – Okay, so here's the deal. Immersion is don't make me drive on the wrong side of the road.
Hmm.
Okay.
I guess that's part of it. I guess it might be a personal thing too.
Because if you invert the controls, I'm screwed, right? If you go with a system that I kind of know, like with touchpad games, I think that's why tablets and smartphones have really opened up that gaming space is because you don't have to think really hard about how to control anything. You just touch it. You do the natural thing. And the games that fail are games that try to shoehorn other controls onto the screen, you know, unnatural things like, oh, I'm going to put a virtual gamepad over here. Well, that's great if I'm playing MAME because that's how it's got to be. But you can't get away with that in other things. But I think that, you know, you take a kid like my buddy Carl on my other podcast. His daughter, she's 5 years old. You hand her an iPad, and you don't tell her a thing about the game, and she's got it figured out in 10 minutes.
That's true. You got to make it simple.
Yep. Or just intuitive. So I guess that's the word I'm going to stick to. The game has to be intuitive.
Hmm. Okay. That's a good quality. The game has to be intuitive.
Right. Because then you're not taken out of the game to try to figure out what you're supposed to be doing. You should be trying to think of what you're supposed to be doing in the context of the game, not externally.
Right. And we talked about TIE Fighter a little bit. I forgot to mention this earlier. A game that I got immersed in pretty quickly that I had never played before until like this weekend, I loaded up Star Wars Empires at War because I found this mod for it. I had never played it before. So I played the tutorial for the first like ground combat mission. It was all right. But I'm like, you know what? I hear the space combat is where this is at. So I just played a random, like, skirmish space mission. Like, an hour later, like, I was like, yeah, Rebels, go! And I was like, what the hell happened to that hour? It was just that good. I was surprised at how good that was. I got totally lost in my little war between the Empire and the Rebellion on this one little map.
Right, and that's a game that I can't play because the ground combat destroys my immersion. Because the whole time I'm playing it, I'm thinking I'm playing Age of Empires with a mod on it.
Yeah. But the reason I loaded it is because someone pointed me to a mod called Thrawn's Revenge. And apparently if you play this mod properly, you can like skip ground combat and like not even worry about it and just focus on the space and the galactic conquest stuff if you want. So I'm going to try that. But yeah, the ground combat was kind of stupid. That wasn't immersive at all. So what I was going to say is, yeah, having a licensed property definitely helps as well, like TIE Fighter.
Well, because people don't have to be educated in the backstory.
Exactly. They don't need all the backstory. They've seen it already. That, I think, is one of the genius moves with Wing Commander, because that was like one of the first real cinematic gaming experiences, I think, for the PC. You had your cutscenes, you had your – like, remember, that was like the game that forced you to buy a sound card.
Yeah, actually,
back in the day, the
first games that were cinematic were, ironically, from CinemaWare.
Oh, like Wings and stuff?
Yeah, Wings, and it came from the desert. It came from the desert. It was brilliant.
I never played those.
And the Rocketeer game, whatever that was called, it wasn't. I don't think it was Rocketeer. It was because that was the movie. Rocket something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Fighting Nazi Zeppelins with your rocket pack. But it had cutscenes. They were like totally cartoons. But yeah, right. It was awesome.
But what I think Wing Commander did effectively well, at least in this realm, is like it had great cutscenes. They used the same engine that the game did, which helped. The stuff in between the game where you get to know your crewmates and stuff like that, that was incredible. Like there was like no game before that that I played that did that. There was like no game before that where I really cared about characters like that. You know, that was just – and characters that I had not, like, created for an RPG already. You know what I mean? So I think Wing Commander, like, right from the get-go set up this universe that was believable. That's another thing. It has to be believable.
Yeah, you have to have a plausible fiction.
Exactly. And some games do and some games don't. Like Renegade, what we're talking about, it kind of did. But it wasn't presented very well, so you're like, why am I doing this? Well, why should I be doing this?
Anytime you take something that's historical, right, like Romans, and then project them into space without a reason, you know, then I immediately identify that as hokey, and it's just broke for me. I play the game in spite of it, you know, but it's almost like embarrassing. Right. I feel bad for it. But yet again, you could reskin the Roman Empire, call them the Vanichuk Empire or something, right?
Right.
And have them do very Roman things, and then I would be like, oh, that's acceptable because it's inspired by, you know, whatever, and this is the point they're trying to get across. But if you like name their ships the Septum and the Pilum and the whatever, I'm like, no, come on. But anyway, so on the site, because you asked.
I asked folks to chime in with what they thought their immersive games were. And so a few people mentioned Free Space, which we just talked about, which is great. But some people also mentioned the first, not the second, the first Independence War or I-War.
Yeah.
Now, I think both games are damned immersive.
Yeah, I would go with that. Because remember when we played it on the show?
Yeah, we played the second one on the show, right. Not the first one.
But it lets you kind of make your own story in the context of the missions and stuff, because at some point it just lets you out of the sandbox or, you know, out of the –
well, that's
you're
second,
on rails.
The first one.
Right, the first the one, it's just mission, mission, mission.
Yeah, exactly.
But the second one gives you a little bit of sandbox to play in.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people like a game like the Grand Theft Auto games. People find that very immersive. Why?
That's true.
Because you're not being dictated a story. You're making your own. Oh, also like Skyrim. You see the pattern there?
Yeah. Well, another one I didn't even think of because I haven't played it really in so long, but one that a few people brought up was Star Shatter.
Yeah.
Which is the closest thing we've gotten to Falcon 4 in space.
Right, because it's not just your ship and the enemy, but there's other ships out there fighting each other that have no interest in you.
Yeah, and you're in a squadron doing your thing, and you can pick the kind of squadron you're in, so you can be a fighter, you can be a bomber. And that was – I never got too into that game because it's balls hard. It is a hard game. I died a lot in that game, like a lot.
Yeah, and one of the guys in here, he's saying about Star Shatter, he said unlike other games where you kill a carrier and a load of enemies every few missions and it doesn't matter, in Star Shatter there's an order of battle for each operation, which is a full campaign.
Right.
And if you kill something, it stays dead.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And let's see. What else did people mention? Star Shatter. Yeah. IWar, of course. Someone mentioned IWar, too, because it managed to make space feel big. That's very true. I mean, I'm still in Act 1 of that game where you're just in that one little system, and it still feels massive. That could be the whole game right there for all I care. And yet, that's only part of it.
You know, I'm thinking about the original Elite.
Yeah, someone mentioned Elite 2 in here somewhere. But yeah, Elite, I think that would definitely fall.
And it was sandboxy again.
It was very sandboxy.
I'm feeling a strong pattern that the games that are most immersive let you kind of do your own thing within the rules set.
I'm sure that helps because you don't feel like you're on rails. You feel like you're making your own story. And then you could share that story with other people.
But then a game like TIE Fighter, which has definite objectives, but it leaves you to figure out how to accomplish them, right? And it's kind of puzzly. But you and I could play something, and we come out of it with a story. I think maybe that's an indicator of immersion. If you come back from playing a game and you have stories other than, oh, I got a high score.
And you want to tell people about it. You know, like when I had a really good – oh, excuse me. Wow. TIE Fighter mission the other day. I wanted to tell people about it. I'm like, oh my God, that was amazing. Because I guess there's another thing. It makes you feel like you accomplished something, and it makes you feel good about what you accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just, oh, kill that ship. Why? Oh, you know, it's part of the game. Okay. You know,
yep.
Like, kill this big ship. It'll really help the war effort. All right. Awesome. Yeah. You know. Semper Fi and whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess that's another thing, is that you really feel like not only the sandbox, but you have to feel like you're accomplishing something, whether it's a sandbox or not.
So Zerker in here said an interesting thing. He said, I'll put my vote in for Homeworld because it made me feel like a space commander in that series.
That's true.
He's like, the situations you were thrown in and the solutions that you sought felt right in the game fiction.
Right.
And and he's got honorable mention to Rules of Engagement.
I was just about to say that because fuck yes. Sure, that game is old and God, it's clunky, but damn if I didn't feel like a starship captain in that damn game. Because again, it had linear missions. They weren't dynamic, but you can make missions. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you choose the ships you use and you choose how to use them. And here you go.
Right. It didn't dictate a path to take.
No.
It wasn't like, here's the key and there's the door and you have to jump on these mushrooms to get there. You know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's even within a hard defined rule set, it allows you to have some creativity.
Right.
So, I think creativity is a key thing because at that point you're putting your own content into the game.
That's true. Oh, and someone mentioned Star Control 2.
Yeah.
I was going to mention that / Starflight 1 and 2 because they're very similar. But those games those were open games like we just talked about. They also had amazing stories, which you just talked about. But, you know, you felt like you were making a difference as well, like what you just talked about. So I think, yeah, those games hit all the notes that we've talked about.
And so it's more a sense of accomplishment, not just progress.
Yeah, like what you're doing matters to the universe. And a lot of games try and do that and fail because I think they try too hard. Because I think a lot of space games, like especially Sims, they make you too important.
Yes.
You know? And so they make you too important, and you feel like if you don't do it, you're gonna, the whole universe is gonna collapse. And Wing Commander, it skirts that line, but it does it so effectively. You know, it does it like, yeah, you're a big, you know, hotshot pilot, but you're not, like, the whole war doesn't, except now and then, mm-hmm. hinge on you.
Wait, okay, so a game that I've been thinking about the whole time that we've been talking about this, okay. And I've just been waiting on the right time to pimp it, is Mike Tipul's Enemy Starfighter. Because that alpha that I played was, oh God, so early of an alpha, but it hooked me immediately.
That's true. You know,
and I knew in 5 minutes of playing that I had to have this game because it's all those things like the guys were saying on your forum about Homeworld and such, right? Where you have a problem to solve and you feel like a commander, but you also feel like the guy that's running scared in the Starfighter, right? So they accomplish both at the same time. And it's not that I have direct control over my capital ships, but right. I told them what to do, right? So then I get to watch the result of my decision play out the window, right? So they're doing what I told them to do, although I don't have direct control anymore. And right. But you're on the battlefield with them, as opposed, you know, your point of view is very important in that, because you're a dude sitting in the cockpit of a fragile starfighter flying around trying to defend your guys so that they can do the thing that you told them to do. And you just pray that the AI is smart enough to actually get it done without doing anything dumb, right? I don't know. I think that's a magical thing there where it's like I set something automated in motion and then I get to observe it as well as influence it. So it's kind of like a building game, you know, where it's like SimCity. I built this city and then I get to walk around the streets, right? It's like, look what I made, except on a weirder scale, right? Because it's more like I created this Starfleet, this star battle, and then I get to actually fly around inside of it.
One thing I think that game has in common with who mentioned it? Someone here mentioned Freelancer, and that game is pretty immersive, I think, because one thing that it has in common with Enemy Starfighter is the chatter.
Yes, absolutely. It's just,
little flourishes like chatter can really add to a game's immersion.
Right, and that I brought that up last week with Paul. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, you're not to that point yet, but don't forget this because yeah, that's very, definitely. Very important. And you know where it was super prevalent was to mention Jane's F-15 again. That was the first flight sim that I can remember that had realistic chatter between the other planes in your flight. And,
and
calls back from the control tower and, you know, that where they you'd be on a mission and you could actually ask your wingman their status and they would respond over the radio and tell you, like, I've got this much fuel, this is my armament. And, yeah, so that was really cool. And then you'd get vectored off. You'd think you're on one mission and then they'd be like, oh, target priorities changed. You're reassigned over to waypoint 3 and bomb this other target now. That kind of stuff that went on. And then,
I just realized I don't have Enemy Starfighter installed on my computer. I need to fix that. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that alpha is like wicked out of date. Have you seen what he's been working on lately? I've watched his Twitch channel.
A little
channel.
Bit. That's the only one we have, though.
Yeah. So. Love the one you got, right?
Exactly. I'm sure it looks amazing on this new monitor. But, yeah, just little flourishes like that can really add to immersion. Like TIE Fighter, it didn't have the chat. It didn't have the vocal chatter. Well, actually, it did a little bit because you'd be watch out, you got hit. And like you'd also see a message log of, wow, pardon me. You'd also see a message log of what's happening, you know, underneath you. So you saw what was going on at all times. You could get a feel for what was going on at all times. You know, you had that situational awareness that you're on a dynamic battlefield where stuff is happening.
Yep.
You know, which is just incredible. So let's see what some of the other games people have mentioned are. Hard War got mentioned a couple of times here, and I agree. You've played Hard War, right?
I have not.
Oh God, it's sci-fi because you're on a planet, but it's like Freelancer on a planet, or Elite on a planet, and like it's amazing because there's all this stuff going on. There's this dynamic economy, and you're like, you know, you can get these dynamic missions from people, and you can piss off the cops, you can work with the cops. That is a great game. I haven't played it in a while. You can download it for like $3 on Dotemu or some crap. Definitely worth playing.
Oh, cool.
Definitely worth playing, even today. Frontier, there's Elite 2 Frontier, Freelancer again. Let's see. Someone mentioned X3, which I've never really felt immersed with the X games. I think maybe it's because, like you said earlier, the interface.
Yeah.
It feels too much like a business game, and I like business games, but I want to fly a ship. I don't want to. I want to worry about my own little ship. Brian mentioned Sins of a Solar Empire, Soar of the Stars, and Endless Space.
I still like it.
Yeah, I know you do.
Maybe not.
I know. Now, I've never played – I'll be honest. I've never played the first Sword of the Stars. I think I've mentioned that before. I really should because I keep hearing how great it is.
It blows my mind you haven't played the first one because the first one is by far the better one.
Do I have it? I have it somewhere. Hang on.
You have to have it. You gifted it.
No, I know I do have it. I know I have it. I just have to find it. Like, do I have it on Steam? Do I have it on Gamersgate? I don't know. I don't know where I have it. I have it somewhere. But I know.
See, that's the problem, and that's why I deal strictly in Steam. Because otherwise, it's like, where is it? I could have it on 10 different services. So.
No, I don't think I have it. No, I don't have it on Steam. I bet you I have it on Gamersgate. That's probably where I have it. I'll put it on my wish list. So if it goes on sale, I'll just buy it here. But yeah, that's a game I think I should play.
Yeah.
I keep meaning to. But
we should play that together. It's more fun with friends.
Is that multiplayer?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big time.
Oh yeah, it says so right there.
We've been almost 2 hours doing this. We gotta quit doing this and start doing that.
Really? Has it been we have been chattering up a storm.
We're in overtime.
Well, let's make sure we covered everybody. Let's see, we talked about Star Shatter, we talked about iWar, Freelancer, Hard War, Frontier, X3, Privateer. Oh, Privateer. Yeah, that was one of the ones I was going to mention.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have been as big into Privateer if I wasn't a Wing Commander fan at the time already.
Mm-hmm.
But Privateer, holy shit. That game grabbed me by the short and curlies and did not let go for months. Like, I probably played that for a straight year. Like hundreds of hours just doing missions, making money, killing shit with my great alien gun.
Yeah, I've heard, because I never played it to the point to get to that. And you know why? Here is my immersion breaker. You were asking me for a game that broke it for me. In Privateer, when you would fight the enemies, right, they would fly away from you. And then they would rotate and fly directly at you. So it was like a bunch of jousting passes that they would do. And the pattern of that, it felt extremely gamey. And then whenever, you know, you're shooting, and whenever you get hits on them, it's like donk, 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 donk. And it's like, seriously? So I could tolerate that in the Wing Commander games, but once I was on to Privateer, I was just like, okay, I'm broke from this. And also the game was balls hard to get started in. It was ridiculously hard.
It could have been easier. I think it just assumed you had been playing all the Wing Commander games like
recently.
Yeah,
but I had played the Wing Commander games, but this game did not play like that because instead of being in a fighter, you know, you get Kilrathi coming at you and you got like a pea shooter and no shields.
Right.
And but still, it's like I have to plink this guy 100 times. So it broke the game for me, and that's why I never played Privateer.
Well, here's an interesting one. Brian also mentions Star Wars Rebellion, which I could play to death. I was totally immersed in that because it's character-based, and I loved that.
Yeah.
It was like Crusader Kings before there was Crusader Kings.
Okay.
But he also mentions Nexus the Jupiter Incident. Now, that's a great game. I couldn't get immersed in that for some reason.
Really?
I think it might have been too clicky, too something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Too something. But it's interesting that he mentions that Distant Worlds may have a lot of super things you can get into, but he felt like he had to climb a mountain to enjoy it, which kind of goes with what you were saying. And I think that's a problem a lot of people have with that game, unfortunately. Yeah. Is that, you know, it is a little daunting.
A little bit.
Little bit. Let me make sure. Someone said X-Wing series. I got into TIE Fighter much more than I ever got into X-Wing.
X-Wing felt too puzzly. X-Wing felt like there's a correct way to do this.
That's true. I guess TIE Fighter kind of widened it a little bit where there were at least a few ways you can do things.
Yeah, or at least it was a thing that by the time you got there, you had the skill to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you are in the mindset of, I have to chase those space bombs, and I have to mark right. These friendly ships in my target computer so I can recall them. And, you know, but yeah, by about the midpoint of TIE Fighter, you're doing a lot of finger ballet.
That's true.
Like,
but you're
used to it.
Yeah, you feel like you have a handle on the game enough that you can do it. I think, remember that the terrible medical frigate mission in X-Wing? Wasn't that like not that many missions in?
That was like maybe the fifth mission. Yeah.
The fifth or sixth, something like that. Yeah, that was like, oh, I'm cruising along. All of a sudden, boom, here's a wall.
Yep.
Enjoy. Like, fuck you. What? Fuck.
Yeah, God. Definitely those pain walls. That would break me out of a game.
Absolutely.
But then again, I don't want a game that I just play on easy mode, right?
I mean, you want it to be challenging, but you don't want it to slam the wall in your face.
Right.
You know, you want it to be enough of a challenge where you feel like, you know, your skills are being tested. You know, that sort of thing. You don't want it to be like, okay, I'm being challenged. Boom. Try that, motherfucker. You know, yeah. Like, no one wants that.
Right.
You know? So let's see. Let's make sure. Oh, someone says Master of Orion 2 is still unequaled in their book. That's Joris. You know what? I can see that. I mean, people are still trying to make Master of Orion 2, and that must be one of the reasons.
Unsuccessfully, yeah.
Unsuccessfully. I mean, I think Master of Orion 2 especially, well, some people would say 1, but I think 2 especially really hit that sweet spot with a really great interface that didn't get in the way.
Hmm.
A wide variety of gameplay options and abilities, you know, make your own story. And the tactical battles, like Joris says, were great. He always played them. I enjoyed them. I think there was a lot of sweetness in Master of Orion 2 that, like he says, it's unequaled in his book. It's not just your book, man.
Right. And it's not a thing. I want to point out, it's not a nostalgia problem. Where,
no, it's not.
You know, okay, like in particular, a movie, Ice Pirates. Have you seen Ice Pirates?
Many times.
Okay, so because I do this bad movie podcast, right?
And yes.
So I'm itching. Like I gotta get a hold of a copy of Ice Pirates because we gotta do that. I know, but I'm saying before I had it, right?
Okay.
And I'm like, I gotta get Ice Pirates because we gotta do this. This is and the,
did you
the
do
guy,
that one?
Yeah, I did. Okay. But that was the thing was I was going into it and I'm like, this is a sure thing. This is 5 stars of funny. And then we watched it and I was just like, wow, that's not at all the movie that I remember because it was like, it was funny, but so much of it was like, wah, wah, you know?
Yeah.
and it was just kind of flat to me, you know?
I had the same experience with Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
When I watched that movie as a kid, I was like, this is great. This is so hilarious. This is stupid. I tried to watch it at a movie day a couple years ago, and we were like, I think we watched the entire thing at 1.5 speed because it was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal to watch. And then we always made fun of the ship with the boobies, the ovary ship.
Oh, yes.
That has boobs.
Yeah.
It just happens to have its own set of... Folks, if you haven't seen Sword of the Stars, Battle Beyond the Stars, it is Roger Corman's really awful attempt to try and do Star Wars.
No.
Star Wars with the Magnificent Seven.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and it's
even with the inclusion of Robert Vaughn and who's the guy that played the guy in the A-Team? Oh God,
Hannibal.
Hannibal. What's that
George
actor's
Pappard.
Name? George Pappard. George Pappard and Hannibal. You're balanced out by John Boy from Little House on the Prairie,
and his dastardly mole.
His dastardly
mole
that has
mole.
Its own gravity. That's not a mole. It's a space station.
They should have made it sentient, and it would talk to him. That could have been his superpower.
Maybe it wasn't the ship that was talking to him. Maybe it was the bull the whole time.
Wow.
It wasn't the ship. It was the bull.
So I was thinking, like, I don't know. I had just mentally
Master
upgraded.
Orion 2. Yeah, well, with Master of Orion 2.
That is not the case with Master of Orion 2, because I can go back and play Master of Orion 2 today, and it is still exactly what I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, I mentally upgraded this in the interim, and it's not really that good of a game. It's still rock solid.
There's no rose-colored anything here. It is just – it stands the test of time. Like a great movie, like a great TV show, this is a great game that just
– I'll tell you another one. Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri.
Oh, well, hell yeah.
Fire that up any day. And
any day of the week.
I don't get sick of it. Any day of the week.
I mean, that has a great interface. That has a lot – has a great universe.
Well, it's plausible how the – well, not really plausible. It's a little far out how
it's
the characters interact.
It's believable enough. It's believable enough.
But the different factions, right, is they took different it's almost like Aliens, but you realize you're all humans. You're just radically different philosophies about how life should be conducted.
Exactly.
And then it's like – oh, well, now you're on this planet, and pretty quick you overcome how the planet hates you. So the planet starts out being the first obstacle, but once you're up to the point where that's trivial now, then the real problem, much like on Walking Dead, the problem is not the zombies. The problem is other human beings.
Yeah. Isn't that the thing with DayZ too?
Yeah, they could take the zombies out. The zombies just don't even have a reason to be.
It's basically an asshole simulator.
It is. It's totally that. It's like, I'm going to kill you for your pants. Which is exactly what the last Robba's video is about. Just back to that.
Kill you for your pants. Yeah. But I think we got everything. I think we got all the games that people mentioned. Yeah. So, folks, I want to thank everyone. We got a good amount of comments on this post about talking about what people's favorite immersive games are and why. It's a lot of good stuff here. So, join the discussion.
Hey, can I pimp my show? Can I do it?
Oh, can I do absolutely. It? I link to it at every podcast.
Oh, okay. So, Bad Movie Podcast, and yeah. I had a hiatus there since like November. And
can I come on?
Yes.
Can I invite myself on?
Yeah, you totally can. You just have to watch a bad movie.
How do you do? So you just pick a bad movie and then watch it?
Well, you have to come over and watch it. So that might be a little bit of an obstacle, but we can arrange something.
We'll watch it on Skype together or something.
Yeah. So we've done that, actually, with a girl from Australia. She's one of our listeners. But anyway, I got a new co-host because Josh – is kind of overcommitted with his Apple development stuff, and then he's got some family things, like his wife got kind of ill for a while, and he's been like really just unavailable, right? But I don't want the thing to pod fade, so I approached him with like, hey, I'm gonna sub for you and whatever. So and we had been doing a thing in tandem with that, like the first half of the show would be about the movie, and then the second half of the show was just whatever random bullshit was on our minds, right? And I would get a lot of feedback from the listeners saying, hey, we really like the second half too, you know, don't ever stop doing that. So what I think we're going to do is we're going to just split that out, because he and I can do that, and it doesn't involve like 2 hours of a movie as a prerequisite, so it will fit more into his tight schedule. But this girl that my wife works with, her husband Carl, he grew up in – well, he was in the military, and he was in Puerto Rico. And he used to go down to the, like, 50-cent cinema, and you could, like, give him – I think he said last night it was, like, 37 cents, right? And you could go in the morning and sit and watch movies all day. And it would be, like, black and white sci-fi movies from the 50s and westerns and, you know, like action movies. And he was like, and it was, he was that way until like the mid 70s, right? So he has this whole encyclopedia of knowledge about all these terrible movies in his head. And he's like raiding my bad movie collection. And he's like, oh, I haven't seen this in forever. And we start talking about stuff and I'm going down the movies that we've already done on the show. And he's like, oh yeah, I've seen that one, seen that one, seen that one. And he's got a pretty good sense of humor, fairly similar to mine. So we get along pretty well. So then he's like, well, hey, I can do the show. So there it was. So I put a new one up. We recorded last night. It's his first podcast experience ever. And, you know, he's for being a first timer, he did admirably well.
Oh, that was his first time?
Yeah. He's never been on air before.
Oh, he did a good job. Yeah. I was enjoying that.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's up at Bad Movie Podcast. The movie that we covered was The Phantom Empire from 1988, where
which sounded so terrible. Which sounded just so terrible.
Well, there's cave women and cowboys and robots and dinosaurs and mole people. And then there's also I can't remember her name, Sybil Danning from the 80s. She was like a softcore porn actress, and in this one I had no idea, but that's his range of knowledge. He was like, oh, no, you didn't have Cinemax? So apparently he's got an extensive history with Sybil Danning. But but it was talking to him about that, and she plays like this space vixen. She's like the empress of space cleavage in her tight leather suit with her sword. And, yeah, it's like everything that you could think would be bad in a movie is in this movie. They knew they were making when they made it. And I can't think of the guy's name. Anyway, the guy from Reanimator is in it. There's a bunch of, like, named actors that are in this thing just slumming. Terrible movie. But, yeah, it got, like, a 2 out of 4 stars out of us. So it was a good time. But we're back on the air. That's the point.
Well, I would love to do one with you at some point.
Yeah, we could do that.
That'd be fun.
Yep. We'll just pick something atrocious and you can do it.
Yay. Well, folks, I think that wraps up what might be one of our longest podcasts ever. But that was a good topic. We had a good discussion and people sent in good responses from the post. We should kind of do that more often, I think.
Yeah, that was fun. I think we need to give more warning, like a week ahead, and let it kind of build.
I just thought of this idea today. Next time I'll definitely give more warning. When we don't have a guest and we think of a topic and we want to get involvement, I'll definitely give more warning.
Hey, when you were growing up, did you have Romper Room on TV?
Oh, sure I did.
You know how they had the magic mirror and they'd be like, I see Brian and I see Jim and I see Mike?
Vaguely. It's been so long.
We should have the magic mirror on the show and just, you know, like name our listeners, anybody that gives us feedback. You know, viewer mail. You don't do viewer mail because we don't get any. So we should ask for some. We could read it. If you send it, we will read it.
Folks, yeah, it's Hail, H-A-I-L, at spacegamejunkie.com. And I believe both Jim and I get that.
Yeah. Also, bad jokes. If you know any space jokes, we could read those too.
So you want to hear something funny? I have a spreadsheet of where all my games are, and I looked at where I have Soar of the Stars. It's on Impulse.
Bad.
I don't even know if I can get that now.
It's super ironic because you bought it for me on Steam because I didn't have.
Yeah, I bought it for you because I knew I already owned it somewhere and I should have bought it for. I'll just get it on the next sale. God damn it.
Well, I guess that episode will be waiting.
Shit. But folks, thank you for listening. And again, yeah, if you have any comments or any questions or want us to read your mail on the show, send it to Hail, H-A-I-L. At spacegamejunkie.com.
Now that's mail about the show. Don't send your bills.
Or dick pics. We don't need any of that.
No dick pics. Boobs are cool though.
No, they're not. We don't need that either. But folks, thank you so much for listening. Jim, thank you so much for co-hosting and have a great night/day wherever you are, folks.
Fantastic.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.